Part 1. Chapter 1. This year's most sought-after invitation must surely be that of the Bridgerton Masquerade Ball, to be held Monday next. Indeed, one cannot take two steps without being forced to listen to some society mamma speculating on who will attend, and perhaps more importantly, who will wear what. Neither of the aforementioned topics, however, are nearly as interesting as that of the two unmarried Bridgerton brothers, Benedict and Colin. Before anyone points out that there is a third unmarried Bridgerton brother, let this author assure you that she is fully aware of the existence of Gregory Bridgerton. He is, however, 14 years of age, and therefore not pertinent to this particular column, which concerns, as this author's columns often do, that most sacred of sports, husband hunting. Although the Misters Bridgerton are just that, merely Misters, they are still considered two of the prime catches of the season. It is a well-known fact that both are possessed of respectable fortunes, and it does not require perfect sight to know that they also possess, as do all eight of the Bridgerton offspring, the Bridgerton good looks. Will some fortunate young lady use the mystery of a masquerade night to snare one of the eligible bachelors? This author isn't even going to attempt to speculate. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 31st of May, 1815.
Sophie! Sophie!
As screeches went, it was enough to shatter glass, or at least an eardrum.
Coming, Rosamond, I'm coming!
Sophie hitched up the hem of her coarse woolen skirts and hurried up the stairs, slipping on the fourth step and only just barely managing to grab the banister before landing on her bottom. She should have remembered that the stairs would be slick. She'd helped the downstairs maid wax them just that morning. Skidding to a halt in the doorway to Rosamond's bedroom, and still catching her breath, Sophie said,
"Yes, my tea is cold."
What Sophie wanted to say was,
"It was warm when I brought it an hour ago, you lazy fiend."
What she did say was,
"I'll get you another pot."
Rosamond sniffed.
"See that you do."
Sophie stretched her lips into what the nearly blind might call a smile, and picked up the tea service.
"Shall I leave the biscuits?"
she asked. Rosamond gave her pretty head a shake.
"I want fresh ones."
Shoulders slightly stooped from the weight of the overloaded tea service, Sophie exited the room, careful not to start grumbling until she'd safely reached the hall. Rosamond was forever ordering tea, then not bothering to drink it until an hour passed. By then, of course, it was cold, so she had to order a fresh pot, which meant Sophie was forever running up and down the stairs, up and down, up and down. Sometimes it seemed that was all she did with her life, up and down, up and down. And, of course, the mending, the pressing, the hairdressing, the shoe polishing, the darning, the bed-making.
Sophie!
Sophie turned around to see Posy heading toward her.
Sophie, I've been meaning to ask you, do you think this colour is becoming on me?
Sophie assessed Posy's mermaid costume. The cut wasn't quite right for Posy, who had never lost all of her baby fat, but the colour did indeed bring out the best in her complexion.
It is a lovely shade of green,
Sophie replied quite honestly.
It makes your cheeks very rosy. Oh, good. I'm so glad you like it. You do have such a knack for picking out my clothing.
Posy smiled as she reached out and plucked a sugared biscuit from the tray.
Mother has been an absolute bear all week about the masquerade ball, and I know I shall never hear the end of it if I do not look my best. Or,
Posy's face twisted into a grimace,
if she thinks I do not look my best, she is determined that one of us snare one of the remaining Bridgerton brothers, you know.
I know.
And to make matters worse, that Whistledown woman has been writing about them again. It only